too much sound complicates things, it confuses things, and it causes annoyance and fatigue.
Too much brain power needed.
too much cognitive load, and it's a known fact. So oftentimes companies will come to me and really say, hey, we have, 60 sounds we want to create. And I go, okay, cool. Let's take a look at the list. Let me understand your product a little better. And let's try to find ways to strip it back. Because, that can just be very overwhelming for users.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Connor Moore. My next guest is a leading expert in audio UX and audio branding. As founder of Seymour Sound, he's shaped how major brands like Google, Uber, Peloton, and Airbnb use sound to enhance products and connect emotionally with audiences. Over 15 years, he's helped define how sound influences everything from brand identity to user experience, and he's been featured in The New Yorker, NPR, and Google's Design Series. He's also a fellow judge for the International Sound Awards, which is how we met. His name is Connor Moore, and his work shows how sound isn't just decoration. It's a powerful tool that shapes how we feel, navigate, and interact with the world. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. Now, here's my conversation with Connor Moore. So welcome, Connor. We have been waiting for this to happen, and I'm really happy that it gets to happen today. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jody. Excited to be here.
Yeah. So I usually start by asking my guest if you have an early memory of how sound moved you. Do you have one of those?
Interesting. Good question. I think for me, we grew up in a very musical family. My dad was pretty adamant about, in every room of the house, we had speakers and with a knob when you walk in the room. So it's hard to pinpoint like a eureka moment for sound that early for me, because it was just kind of ever present. It's kind of ingrained. But I think something that does resonate with me is just kind of realizing, especially with the work that I do in audio branding and UX sound design, kind of when that eureka moment happened for me, which, crazy to say, it was about 18, 19 years ago. And at the time I was living in San Francisco and was going to a music production and sound design focused school there after I graduated my undergrad. And at the time my brothers were both living in San Francisco as well, and they both had their own visual branding studios. So I was kind of in school being immersed in, really more focused on music production and composition primarily. But, and I was doing some campaign-based work, licensing music, doing some composition at that time. But, I was thinking about, my brother's practices and seeing how they worked in a more strategic, long-form way with clients. And it really kind of, struck me that at that time, there was a lot of music houses doing, obviously, campaign-based work and things like that. But how we think about sonic branding today, wasn't really happening back then. So, it really begged the question for me of, why aren't brands thinking about sound and music like they are for their visual branding assets? So that to me, was a bit of a eureka moment and really kind of set me on my path. started my own company, got my website up and running, and really just changed the way I think about sound in general for brands. In a more evergreen, long-lasting way. So it changed everything. The way I think about it, like I said, you know, but also the way I talked about the work. That tiny little tweak kind of changed everything. Because, you know, I was doing the music licensing campaign-based work, which is great. But once I kind of pivoted that thinking into a more strategic, intentional, longer-term effort with companies, that's when things really took off, you know. So, yeah, it's interesting because, you know, audio logos, sound logos have been around forever, right, for a very, very long time. But they're not, back then, I think they were more kind of, you know, composed, created for these companies and used for 5 years just by chance or 10 years or 20 years. And by nature of them being repeated and played, you know, for a long period of time, became memorable and iconic. Whereas
that's
now,
how we remember them, right?
Like totally.
That's what we learned,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Especially with Intel, for instance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really interesting case, though, because when it comes to Intel, they actually were buying space on other people's advertising for a really long time.
Huh. Interesting.
So, yeah. So that's why you heard that that audio logo so often, because it would come with every computer that had Intel inside, right?
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, it's, you know, the repetition is everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I tell clients all the time, every client, you know, when you're jumping into a sonic branding effort with the sound logo, they're like, we want the ta-dum. And it's like, yeah, cool. You have to take some ownership over that too, because it's really about the repetition of it. Like the sound itself is a unique, sure, but, you know, it goes against a lot of the common successes we have with sound logos, you know, to where if it wasn't played repeatedly and if everyone and their dog weren't watching Netflix, you know,
it wouldn't be quite as effective.
No, not at all. But to sum it up, I think, you know, back then companies were still doing a version of sonic branding, but now it's done much more intentionally, much more at scale, and thinking about product. Like, that's a lot of the work I do. Back then, people weren't really doing product-based sound design in an intentional way. And now that's a huge space. So,
Yeah. So you have your own company doing this now?
Correct. Yeah, Seymour Sound. Yeah, I've had it for, I mean, it's been around for 16 years now. And I did take a little hiatus. I worked 3 years at another agency based in New York. I was executive creative director there. In coming this April will be 2 years back to my practice.
So what did you learn in New York that helps you with what you're doing now? I'm curious.
I mean, I learned a lot. I made great, you know, relationships there. I would say I learned a lot from a business standpoint, to be totally honest. You know, they were very buttoned up as a business, and we went through an acquisition. So learned a lot about that in that time. And also just more about presentation. It wasn't much about, I mean, my process before joining them was pretty much the exact same, you know, it was presented a little bit differently, but, so, you know, it was a great, experience to take things that I thought were working well and continue doing what I was doing before.
Yeah. So what's your process now as far as taking on a client and getting them what they think they need?
Yeah.
Because that's always a little bit of a...
Yeah. That's a good way to put it, because, you know, no new business endeavor is the same, you know, and really with my company, it is just me, right? But I scale per project. So right now, for example, I have 7 projects happening. And I have 5 or 6 different composers working with me, a couple strategists as well. So, you know, it's different from your typical agency model where you have whatever 10 to 50 people on staff all the time. So I scale per project, and the talent is directly picked for the project. You know, if it's UX based, I pull in very good UX designers. If it's logo based, it's specific to that. Also by genre and style. But Yeah, like I said, every project is different when it comes in. More recently, you know, I find I compete a lot with the bigger agencies, you know, the agencies of 10 to, you know, 200, right?
Sure. What do you think that you offer that's better than or, you know, might give you an advantage to the bigger agencies?
Yeah, I think the first thing, and I'm very clear about this when I pitch to clients is, you know, those bigger agencies often have their founder involved in the pitch, you know, and in really selling the business, but they're not involved in the work, right? They don't get FaceTime outside of that pitch with that person, who usually those people are like myself, 15, 20 years in the space, really know the space. Whereas with my business, I'm involved at every stage. You know, I might be doing 50% of the design. I might be doing 100% of the design, right? Certainly part of the client, you know, side, you know, as far as showcasing work and talking to executives and things like that. So that's a big value add, having a veteran in the industry in the room at all times, and really guiding the work. That is really the biggest differentiator. I also tie into company Slack channels, their Microsoft Teams. I mean, a lot of these companies probably do that as well, but I work, especially for UX-based work, UX is highly, highly iterative, you know, and agency model typically works on whatever 2 week to 3 week design cadences where, you know, the project goes dormant for a while, then the work is shown and then there's feedback and then it goes dormant and it's this kind of cycle. Whereas, you know, I can work faster and nimbler.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
But, you know, in the pitch process, like going back to the original question, I think I was on a recent one with a big automotive company, and I knew the other two agencies involved who were very, very good and very talented and have portfolios just as good as my company's. And the automotive company had a POV on what they needed, right? It was like, we have to have a sound logo. That's the primary. We want a brand anthem, you know, and then we want UX. And I said, okay, how can I come into this pitch a little bit differently? You know, cause I know those guys are going to present just what they asked for. So I came in and I said, okay, cool. I hear you. Here's a quote for that, right? I'm going to address that. I'm going to show you how we would do that work and what that would look like. But I'm also going to make a recommendation. And my recommendation is actually start with UX through the brand lens.
So why would you do that? Yeah.
Because they're a product first company. It's an automotive company. Without the product, you don't have the brand.
So of course, yeah.
That is the biggest touch point for their customers. And you can do the audio branding process through UX. It's really the same process. And I also ask, you know, do you guys have a need for a custom original composition and music? Like, are you looking for a large music library, for example? And they were like, no, not really. And I poked at that and I said, okay, well then why do you think you need a brand anthem? And they thought they needed a brand anthem because that's what old agency model does. They start with the big brand anthem and then they take the DNA of that, the instrumentation, key signature, the melodic, the motifs, and then they make a sound logo out of it, right?
And but what does the car sound like?
Exactly. So all to say, you know, they were like, wow, I really appreciate this POV. I think you're right, you know, and we can then craft, you know, for example, a welcome experience within a car, you know, those key brand moments within the user experience. Let's extract that as a sound logo. You know, it probably won't be the exact same. It'll have the same, you know, overarching, if it's a melody, you know, that will be contained. It might be more layered for marketing and brand usage. But there's a way to do that that I think really gets the client the materials they need, you know, the most in an effective way, because, you know, and also I'm saving them money, because if they did the old school method, that's a massive ticket price, right? And I did that. I offered that to them and it was big, you know, and then I did the other approach and I was like, look, this way, going this route is going to save you money. So I think that's a big differentiator too for me is at this point in my career, I'm pretty straight shooter, you know, with clients, and I tell them exactly what I think. And if they don't want that, then they can find someone else, you know, that's totally fine. But I think most people value that, you know, they look at that and they go, that they either say, cool, I want that, let's do it. Or they say, yeah, we want to go that way, but I appreciate your candor. And it's like, cool. Yeah, we're all good. You know, it works out for everyone.
Yeah, it's important for them to know that you're being honest with them.
Totally.
I mean, at the very least, that's pretty important when you're doing business with people.
Well, I mean, the sales process too, and I've seen it, you know, it can get a little, you know, kind of silly sometimes. So I avoid that, you know, 100%.
Yeah. There's a lot of marketing speak in this business, and some of it is useful and some of it is not.
Well, every business, you know, and it's like, I don't blame, you know, people for their process or how they, you know, how they win business. You know, it's just I choose to operate differently, you know?
Sure. Yeah. So was there a UX first brand that you worked with that you'd like to maybe talk about? You loved working on, like,
I'll do that a couple ways, I think. So the first project I ever had, this is a funny one, because I was in school at the time in San Francisco, and I'd been licensing music for this agency based in SF, and they were like, hey, have you ever worked on like product sound design? Again, this is like 16 years ago, and I was like, oh yeah, totally. I'd never done this work before, right?
But you always say yes.
Especially early in your career, you have to. I mean, you gotta put yourself out there.
I love it.
So I took it on, and this is actually for a product demo for Samsung Europe. So I did that work, and the funny thing too is I went into the head of the school, and I was like, hey, I just had a meeting with this agency and Samsung Europe about product sound design. How do I scope for this? You know, I had no idea what to do. And he was like, first of all, how the hell did you get in the room? You know, and I was like, you know, I don't know. I mean, a lot of that comes down to luck, being in the right place at the right time.
Oh, but impress your professor. Sure.
Yeah. But anyway, so that work, you know, that was for product demo. But so that work is not out in the world to my knowledge, and that was a long time ago. But from that, I built a great relationship with a guy who worked at the agency. He was a ECD at the agency at the time, and he has had a massive career, you know, spike over the last 15 years. He's, you know, been high up at Amazon, at Google, at Stripe. And because I said yes to that, you know, we built a relationship and he's pulled me into countless projects, you know, and just because I did put myself out there for that. So that was cool. I think that's a good, you know, the first real experience. I love working in the automotive space. So I've done a lot of work across that space. Lucid Motors being one of my big clients. And that was really cool just because it's a very sophisticated, elegant brand and their cars are absolutely beautiful on the interior. Very well designed, high attention to detail. Obviously their speaker system is pretty incredible.
So were you involved in the UX within the car?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so
I would love to share some of those sounds if you're able to do that.
Happy to. I'd love to share them with you for sure. But yeah, I mean, you know, reflecting that kind of elegant soundscape in, you know, in longer form kind of compositions when appropriate. And carrying a through line from those kind of more key brand moments. But it's a really, it's a unique soundscape. I think it's an outlier in the automotive space. You know, a lot of the automotive space, just like any industry, you know, there kind of becomes tropes and trends that get followed. And I think it really sticks out and holds its own.
Well, yeah, I mean, inside a car has the ability to make that car manufacturer feel luxury or not.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Even the sound of the car itself, like the slamming of the door, you know, or like the way that it starts up, the sound that starts up, like all of this makes the car feel more luxurious as you drive in it.
All about attention to detail in this design. I mean, like you said, closing the door, you know, closing, you know, a compartment in the car, you know, the car horn. You know, all these things.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
you can hear the quality of a product, and that impacts perception, right? If someone's going to pay $100,000 for a car, they expect, you know, a level of detail to be paid attention to. So that's one of my all-time faves. I think one of my other ones to speak to real quickly is a product called Sense. It was by a company called Hello. And this is probably 12 or 13 years ago. I think the sounds are pretty dated now, but at the time, I think it was pretty groundbreaking. And what the product was a little orb that sat on your nightside table, and it would gather data, lights, sound, humidity, all this, these different things within your room that affect your sleep. And it had an app integration that would track your movement. So it was early, you know, early day, very detailed sleep tracker.
And it was they do this all on my Ring now.
Yeah. Oh, everything has changed so much.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was a beautiful product too. And like, it kind of blew up early on. Unfortunately, the company's not around anymore. But you know, that was an opportunity to create longer form compositions for alarms and sleep tones. And, you know, that was at the time when, like, iPhones kind of had some interesting design happening. I mean, nowadays, you know, with Pixel and, you know, Apple products, you know, they have internal sound design teams that are extremely talented and
Samsung too.
Yeah. And very thoughtful about design. So they're doing that now. But back then, they were just very simple kind of ringtones and alarms. And what I did is I went in and really crafted really long form compositions that gradually pick up over time, you know, with volume, percussiveness, harmonics, you know, complexity. So the concept was about keeping the time of peace as long as you can in sleep, you know. But when you need to wake up, for light sleepers, they would wake up at the beginning note, and for heavy sleepers, they would wake up at the end, you know, at the end of that 15 seconds. So to me, that was like a big shift in my design thinking about what I call considerate design, you know, in terms of considering the end user and how they're impacted.
Well, what is it meant to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wake people up.
Not just is that a sound that we could hear, but what is that sound meant to do?
Yeah.
And how often are you going to hear it?
Right.
Because I know you've also worked on a game for Peloton, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you're gaming UX, you're going to have someone using that menu item, for instance, multiple times over a long period of time. Right?
Yeah.
So there's a consideration, I'm assuming, that goes into the UX design for a game that might be different than, say, something like the Hello design.
Yeah, they're very different. I mean, to be totally candid, I don't do a ton of game design. Peloton's been a long-term partner, and I've worked across massive swaths of their products and brand. And it was really fun to work on that game because it's a very interactive game design. But yeah, the menu, I think again, I don't study the gaming sound space as much, but from what I do know, just the gaming environment, you know, you have the ability to kind of make even UX, UI sounds more colorful and more lively than your standard product experience, I would say. But no, it's a huge consideration, and you have to think about it. Like, it's dependent on the product, where it lives in an environment, but also the context of the interaction within that product experience. So, you know, and what I do is often do like frameworks for companies to where it's like, hey, you know, this is considered a brand or hero sound. This is considered a functional sound. This is considered a, you know, there's different categories, and just slotting them in to where we're really thinking about it in an intentional way. And it helps with the teams too, because I find sometimes with companies who haven't worked in sound, they'll kind of think everything, you know, if you have a product experience that has 20 sounds in it, everything should be very distinct and very ownable and branded. And it's like, no, we don't really need to do that. In fact, that can be perceived as really annoying over time. So having that level of intentionality and strategy is helpful for end users, but also the flow of the project.
Hi, this is Luke Mosley from Hear Me Out. You're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about the power of sound. If you're interested in harnessing that power of sound yourself, keep listening.
So you're using sounds that fit together, not necessarily that are super distinct from each other. It's like a soundscape within this one thing that all relates together.
Yeah, I mean, there should be a level of cohesion across the experience, of course, but there should also be levels of distinction, right? So a welcome sound for an in-car experience could be very soft and inviting, whereas like Ford Collision sound, it can't be soft. You know, it has to be kind of in your face.
An alarm should be alarming.
Yeah. So, you know, there should be a through line, you know, between everything. So I always think about that. It's like, what are those tying threads, you know, that keep it all together, but then making sure we have room to differentiate based on, you know, what we're trying to convey, essentially.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. And I know that you've also talked about silence as an important part of sound too, right?
Yeah.
So what do you mean by that? Especially in your context.
Yeah. I mean, for sound to be impactful, there has to be silence, you know? Just think about when people speak, you know, if I was up here just blah, 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 which probably I am, you know, your word
That's why we're here.
Yeah,
I'm here to get you to talk, Connor.
Yeah, it is a podcast. Speech is more effective when there's silence intermixed, right? In music too. Like think about, you hear a great, you know, jazz instrumentalist, whatever instrument they're playing, they take rests, you know, and they give space. I mean, the whole collaborative element of music is space and how, what you do with that space. So it's the same with the user experience, right? And to me, at the end of the day with UX, too much sound complicates things, it confuses things, and it causes annoyance and fatigue.
And too much brain power needed.
Yeah, too much cognitive load, and it's a known fact. So oftentimes companies will come to me and really say, hey, we have, you know, 60 sounds we want to create. And I go, okay, cool. Let's take a look at the list. Let me understand your product a little better, and let's try to find ways to strip it back. Because, you know, that can just be very overwhelming for users. So in a lot of scenarios, what I do is I'll kind of try to create a universal global design language that is like really addresses like we're using one universal sound for, you know, confirmation state, one universal sound for an error state. You know, these basic things that happen a lot in user experience where, you know, it doesn't have to be super differentiated for this feature moment, right? Or maybe it is like slightly tweaked a little bit, so it is customized for that feature. But there's a lot of power and simplicity and silence. And like, you know, that is the biggest takeaway of my time in this space is simplicity, you know, and silence.
There's a kind of elegance in that, I think, actually.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So, I mean, using sound where it makes sense, not just because you need a sound there.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.